Shutesgat Martinez is the author of We Rise, The Earth Guardian's Guide to Building a Movement that Restores the Planet, which will be out this fall from Rodale Press. And he was born and raised in Boulder, so this is a hometown interview before he embarks on a tour for the book. So thanks, Shutesgat, for being part of this.
Pleasure to be back.
So tell us why you decided to write this book at this point and what the goal of getting the information in this book out is.
I spent like the last 10 or 11 years of my life really heavily engaged on the front line of several different issues, from locally here in Colorado, working on fracking and pesticides, to working on youth empowerment and education across the country and in different parts of the world, attending different United Nations climate summits and conferences. And what I've learned is that this generation, particularly the young people that I feel like will play a really critical role in shaping the movements that will create change in this world, we need a sense of direction. We need something to hold on to. And I think after Trump was elected, there was a lot of anger from different communities and different people expressed in a lot of different ways, but it wasn't focused enough. It wasn't mobilized or it wasn't being built around anything. So I believe that this is a really important time for us to mobilize and to really build strong foundations of organization and leadership. And I believe that this book will help make that happen. We Rise is looking at where the world is at right now, zooming in on smaller issues like food justice, like biodiversity loss, fossil fuel extraction, through the lens of the bigger picture issue of climate change, from the perspective of a member of the generation that will be inheriting these issues, from my perspective, from what I've learned, the people I've met, the stories that I've been a part of. And really, it's looking at everything from a way of how do we create the solutions? You know, how do we understand, how does understanding an issue help us understand where we're going? And how does it give us the power to shape where we want to go? So every chapter has calls to actions written into it. A lot of it is talking about the solutions that we can create at a community level, at an individual level, at a corporate level. So it breaks down and looks at not only why is this what the environment or what the planet needs, but why is it the future of our economies? Why is that dependent on sustainable energy and having a healthy, balanced climate? So it's a very diverse array of different stories. We interview a lot of different activists and frontlines leaders, indigenous rights activists, actors and actresses that have been engaged in these movements. We Rise is really about the movement. It's about all of us. It's a call to action that hopefully when people put this book down, they know they have the inspiration and the knowledge and some of the tools to go forth in their own community and pursue change.
Since the election of Trump, and even well before, there are a lot of different environmental groups working on climate change. There's groups working on all these different issues. And maybe one of the things that's happened is that there is more intersectionality, and there is a chapter on intersectionality, which is so important. One of the specialties of Earth Guardians has been really energizing youths. So you can talk a little bit about the role of youth, because youth voices are not always heard in all of the movements, whether it's the movement for climate change or the movement against police brutality or to protect biodiversity.
I think that if you look at a system in nature, when it lacks diversity, it fails to thrive. And when we look at systems of economy or cities or movements or political systems, that when they lack diversity, they won't last forever. So building strength and diversity is a really critical part that this book is really promoting and encouraging. Not only racial diversity and diversity in perspectives and backgrounds, but a multi-generational, an intergenerational movement is, I think, very important. And young people, as the generation that will inherit everything that we do over the next several decades, we have to be a very important, prominent voice on the forefront of a lot of these issues in the way that I see it. So Earth Guardians, the organization that I've been working with my whole life, has a really strong focus on that. And this book does as well, with empowering the young people that don't feel like they have a voice, that are very lost in the world, that are apathetic and disconnected or hopeless, that these feelings are addressed. Because being a 17-year-old kid going to high school in the eyes of my peers and having just a lot of friends that are just living their lives and doing their thing, there is a lot of difficulty among our generation to focus on things and to be empowered and engaged. And being a young person in the world today can be really difficult for many different reasons. So I think, yeah, uplifting the younger generation is a really critical part of everything that I do.
I think every generation has a minority of people who are activists, and that can be really frustrating. And I know when I was in my early 20s, it was Rocky Flats and feeling that there could be impending destruction at any time from nuclear weapons. It was really frustrating to see people just going about living their lives, and knowing that right now the climate situation is in such dire straits and the biodiversity and the ecological destruction is so imminent, it's really frustrating to see people just looking on their phones and sending silly pictures of whatever on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. So What kind of things do you tell people, whether they're youth or whether they're adults, about what it is to really be a committed activist and to really work for change and for survival?
Yeah, I think breaking down the barriers of kind of the box we've put activism in over the last several years is really important. I think we see activists and people that care about these kind of issues with kind of a not necessarily positive connotation. I think in culture and in society that to care about an issue, you have to be an activist. You know, you have to be an environmentalist, and that kind of thing isn't popular. So the approach that I've taken over the last several months is understanding how do we, instead of trying to make the whole world or everybody in this country become activists, how do we bring a sense of understanding that we have the power to create change into our lives, doing whatever it is that we already do. You know, whether we are our scholars or librarians or SoundCloud rappers or whatever that is that we find, you know, that we are connected to, whatever we're passionate about, whatever we're contributing to the world, how can we create change through what we're already doing as students or teachers, you know? I think that's really important. I think it also understanding that climate change is such a diverse issue that is so much bigger than just the environment. So if you care about women's rights or indigenous rights or Black Lives Matter or LGBTQ communities, like if you look at the communities that are being most impacted by our climate crisis, it is those marginalized communities. It is women and children of color. It is a disproportionate impact on queer communities. And, you know, all over the world, there are a lot of issues that people want to put time and energy and focus into. We need people to go forth and engage in that. But I think as anybody out there that is an activist or that cares about a certain problem, we have to have an awareness that climate change is an umbrella issue that is going to affect all of our movements, all of these issues in a really big way. And that is a really powerful thing because it can bring us together in a way that we haven't before, you know. And if you look at a movement like Standing Rock that brought so many people together, that wasn't from a perspective of like, let's all of a sudden all become activists. No, the water protectors were at the front lines of Standing Rock. Those were grandmothers and grandfathers, women and children, you know, moms and dads that were there to protect their kids, that would protect their right to clean water, their sovereignty and their land, you know, their traditional ancestral sacred land. That were then if you look at this country and the relationship with indigenous people, Standing Rock really publicly showed how racist this nation still is and how much oppression and injustice still there is towards Native peoples, in the same way that police violence revealed that and social media revealed that about Black communities. So that was a movement of great crisis, but also a movement of great unification. How can we allow this really pivotal point in history where climate change is either going to destroy the planet or be our opportunity to take it to a different place? How do we allow that to unify our movements? How do we allow that to wake up people that aren't engaged, aren't on the sidelines, that don't care? And it's got to be a celebration. It's got to be about love. It's got to be about protecting the things that we care about. It has to be a positive thing. We have to feel empowered by it. That's what I'm all about, you know, because I don't want to do anything that's not fun, being a 17-year-old kid. And I've had a blast, you know, traveling the world and meeting incredible people and dedicating my life to this. And we all have a part to play, no matter how small.
And one of the interesting things about Standing Rock, I was there, you were there, was that it came about because of the young people. The young people were the ones saying to the other people in the tribe, what are you all doing about this? Wait a minute, this is going to go under our river, under our water, and put our water at risk. And I can't say shamed everybody else into action, but it definitely motivated and moved people into action. And it seems like that's what Earth Guardians is also doing.
I think that story of how Standing Rock started is super critical to really focus on and really give credit where credit is due to the One Mind Youth Movement, which were young people across different reservations that were focusing on primarily teen suicide amongst reservations, which is, I mean, the national average, it's more than double the national average of suicide rate if you look at suicide among indigenous reservations. And that's one issue that really mattered to them. And then as soon as they saw an issue like a pipeline being poked through their land, through their tribe, that kind of woke them up to a bigger picture. One of the most powerful stories I heard about Standing Rock is that the suicide rates at Standing Rock, at that reservation, dropped like drastically during the time of the encampment, like incredibly drastically, almost to none, over those 8-9 months that people were camped out there, because young people felt empowered and they had a purpose and they were fighting for something and they were excited to be a part of a movement. That shows you, if you think, you know, there are people that have different opinions about Standing Rock, like, oh, it's like economically we needed a pipeline there, or, you know, it's the environment doesn't matter, indigenous rights don't matter, what about teen suicide? You know, if that is an issue that you care about, or you have young teenagers, if you're a parent of young teenagers, like, look at that as a reason that issue was important. So it really bridged that gap as well for young people to care about that issue from a perspective of bringing healing to their tribe and their community. That was really important, and acknowledging that Standing Rock started because of the youth that ran across the country, you know, literally ran to the Democratic National Convention and did a sacred run in prayer. The whole movement was based in prayer, and it's a really beautiful thing what it accomplished. And people said we lost because they drilled the pipeline, but I think in a lot of ways we won because of the momentum that we built and the people that we inspired and the lives that we literally saved.
Definitely. I wonder if, shifting a little bit, we could talk about a couple of the lawsuits. There's a lawsuit here in Colorado, and there's a federal lawsuit that you're one of a number of plaintiffs on. Could you talk about what's going on with those?
Yeah. So the federal lawsuit is very exciting. I've been engaged in this for the last several years. In 2015, we filed a lawsuit, myself and 20 other youth, holding the federal government accountable for violating our constitutional rights, for failing to act on climate change, saying that the way that our government was operating currently was a direct infringement upon our constitutional rights to life, liberty, property. And for us, there's a few different things that go into the legal proceedings. And if you look at the environmental movement, this hasn't really been done before as far as youth suing for climate justice. And if you look back through history, law has been an important part, walking side by side with marching in our streets and grassroots activism. So our generation, this is our take on it. For us, it's using the legal system in a way that our government hasn't protected our rights and isn't protecting our rights, all the way from a presidential level down to our congressman here in the state of Colorado, who is bought out and owned by the fossil fuel industry, Governor Hickenlooper, even to our mayors and our local elected officials. A lot of them aren't representing the best interests of the people. So taking it to the judicial, that branch of government, you know, is really important for us. The second piece is the storytelling. There are 21 young people here from the ages of like 9 to 25. Many of us can't vote. Many of us can't elect our leaders and the people that represent our voices. Another thing too is we all have a story. All of us are being impacted by climate change in a different way. And as someone from Boulder, my story is really about the wildfires that are wiping out the forest every single year, every summer. The pine beetle kill that has increased in intensity and severity across the state. You know, those are forests that I grew up in, that I spent my whole life playing in, and now they're gone, a lot of them. So every young person has their own story. And the third piece is the science, is that we are working with the top climate scientists in the world to form a climate recovery plan that we are demanding that the federal government put into place. James Hansen has taken the lead on this climate recovery plan, former NASA scientist, and he said that we have to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions as a nation by between 7% and 9% every single year until we get back down to a safe level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So it's a really important landmark lawsuit. There was a motion to dismiss filed by the federal government and several different fossil fuel entities. After being reviewed by two different federal judges, they denied the motion to dismiss, granting us the right to move forward and actually have a day in court to go to trial this coming February. So we're building up a lot of momentum to take this court to trial, this case to court. We're very excited. And for us, it marks a really important symbol of hope. I think it was 2 or 3 days after Trump was elected that we got the news that we were going to have a day on trial, showing us that it doesn't matter who's our president, because the power to create change isn't dependent on the person in office. You know, it really can happen from a grassroots level, and everybody that's involved are grassroots activists. Our lawyers are grassroots activists, you know, that we're practicing law in a way that is defending our rights and standing up for our communities.
Where is that federal court case actually going to be carried out?
In Eugene, Oregon. So yeah, we're going to be building up a lot of events and social media campaigns and momentum up towards that moment and when we go to trial.
Yeah. And there's also a case in state court in Colorado for the Oil and Gas Commission. Is that correct? Or is that still proceeding?
Yeah, so we sued the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, which is the government entity that is meant to regulate the fossil fuel extractive industry here in Colorado, for failing to do their job. And for written into their mission statement, is said to they're supposed to also, in with protecting the rights of these corporations, they're also supposed to protect the rights of nature, of these communities. And the last several years of drilling here in the state of Colorado, they have never once turned down a permit brought to them by the fossil fuel companies here in Colorado. We have tens of thousands of wells all over the state of Colorado that have already been drilled that are active today. It's one of the biggest threats to the health of our air, to our water quality, to our communities, and the health of young people and elders in particular. So to really call out the industry and say that they have a responsibility to, first of all, do an independent study to prove that fracking isn't safe. You know, so we are asking for a moratorium, a statewide moratorium on all fracking until we know that it's safe, which for us, we know that it'll never be proven to be safe and you can't frack safely. So we want a temporary moratorium. And then if it's found to be not safe, which it will, they will no longer be allowed to accept permits. They will no longer be allowed to frack in the state of Colorado. So it's a really ambitious lawsuit here. And the COGCC, we brought this straight to them. And they denied it. So now, and then it was taken to the Court of Appeals this last March, I believe. And the Court of Appeals are now going to give us another chance to take it to the COGCC for to have them hear our case again. So there's momentum building around that, and there's a lot of grassroots action building. Here in Boulder, Colorado, in Boulder County, actually, we got a five-year moratorium on fracking, which was a massive success that we had here. But now the moratorium is lifted, and they're going to be drilling dozens of well pads all over Boulder County, especially out in East Boulder. And that movement and that invasion is not only it's going to become more and more personal for my family, my little siblings, you know, the people that I care about. So there is a lot of momentum working on a grassroots level that we will begin to kind of reveal as we get more organized. But yeah, a lot of resistance has to happen against this industry because it's really hurting a lot of people, and it's going to continue to do so until we rise up.
In this book, We Rise, there's a chapter on fossil fuels. There's also a chapter specifically devoted to fracking. And a lot of anti-fracking activists are feeling that the way the laws are written, there's no way to actually prevent or resist fracking or even regulate it to any safe level. Some people are saying, well, maybe the only thing left is civil disobedience. As a young activist, what do you think about all of the different solutions and possibly using nonviolent civil disobedience?
It's really difficult because several different cities across the Front Range have tried to ban fracking independently, knowing that our state government won't support it. But locally, these communities don't want this extractive industry because they're not benefiting it from it. The only people that are benefiting it from it are our politicians, unfortunately, and the CEOs of these companies. So what has happened is in every case, except for in Boulder County, the people who tried to bring forth moratoriums and bans, they were sued by Hickenlooper and by the state of Colorado, essentially, for asserting their own community rights. So it's been a pretty intense uphill battle. And I really believe that the power of nonviolent civil disobedience is something we really have to take into consideration for the future. Standing Rock was a great example of that. I think that there have been different moments throughout history where it's been done really creatively, you know, really beautifully, that we can really pull from a lot of these different leaders and people that have done incredibly powerful demonstrations of reasserting our power as people through resisting a current system that is really oppressive, actually really oppressing these communities, our voices, our rights. So I really believe that that's where we got to turn to. Also, Hickenlooper is going to be out of office soon, you know, so let's elect a politician that is really going to represent the people and not going to let them frack us. And I'm considering running myself. That would be quite a funny
Are you old enough?
Not to win, but I don't know. I think we've explored that in the past, actually, is to make a statement, you know, to run against Jared Polis, who I think is going to run. And Jared Polis also has sold out to the fracking industry, which is really a bummer because he was an ally of ours for a long time.
Shuteska, you're also a musician, a rapper, and music has such an incredible power to reach people and help motivate the movements. They don't create the movements, but they can help amplify the movements. They're also promoted in different ways. They're promoted as a one-person thing. So can you talk a little bit about your music and then about the effort to cover that balance between what it is to be a musician and try and promote your career as a musician and also as a grassroots activist?
Definitely. That's such an important balance, and I think a really important duality that I'm facing in my life is understanding the difference between the two and where the intersectionality is and where they are separate things. I've been involved in activism since I was like 6 years old, even before then, you know, attending rallies and marches with my family. I fell in love with music just a couple years ago. I've been playing piano since I was like 7. I've been writing rhymes kind of casually since I was like 9 or 10. Really seriously got involved in writing and creating music, producing, using Ableton to make beats, working with other artists over the last couple of years. And music has really begun to guide my life, playing music festivals across the country. We just played Arise Festival this last year again for the 5th time. So this is our 5th year at Arise. And it's just crazy to see how we've grown from the first year to the 5th year. Really using music as a tool for expression for myself. When I had moments of feeling really lost in this movement, not really knowing who I am or what my purpose is versus what the world wants me to be, music helped me find my way. writing songs about it helped me find my way, going through pain or through frustration or anger. Writing music helped me find my way. So it's really therapeutic in that way. And also it helps you connect with so many incredible people. I think some of the coolest people on the planet are musicians, mm-hmm. you know, and being able to sit around a fire and jam and play the guitar and sing. And I think human nature is to come together around music. So that is one thing that makes music a really powerful organizing tool as well. Because if we're marching through the streets, you know, we have all these chants, hey, hey, ho, ho, you know, climate change has got to go. And like these chants, you know, they're okay. But I think if we can get together in the streets and we can sing together, you know, rather than having, you know, a performer on a stage, like if we can sing together and create music together, there are a lot of people like the Flowbots, a conscious hip hop group out of Denver that are doing a lot of work to create movement songs. And their work is really impressive. I've looked up to them for a while, performed on stage with them a bunch of times. You know, I think really looking at how can we further create a synergy between these two cultures of music and of activism. I think hip-hop too has traditionally been something that is meant to tell people's stories, a voice for the oppressed. If you look at where it was born in the Bronx in the late 70s, like that was a tool for these youth that had nothing to express themselves, to feel like they were a part of something that wasn't violent, you know, that wasn't focused on something negative. So I think that the roots of hip-hop are really beautiful, and what it's become today is something that we really gotta, you know, work to find the balance, because there are a lot of young MCs and a lot of young artists out there that are pursuing truth or uplifting positive messages, from Kendrick Lamar to Joey Badass to, you know, J. Cole. There's a lot of them out there. And for me as a young hip-hop artist, really understanding that part of my purpose in all of this is to change what's happening with hip-hop, change the relationship that hip-hop has with media, and change the relationship that hip-hop has with youth. Being a young kid who a lot of friends of mine have gone through depression, friends of mine have committed suicide, friends of mine have lost hope in the world and become apathetic and really pessimistic about the future of the planet, friends of mine that don't care about anything. And being at a lot of those places myself too has really shown me that music is what has uplifted me in a lot of ways, and how can we use music to uplift young people everywhere. So I think music has a really powerful opportunity to create change and to inspire people, to bring people together, to carry out a message. You know, if I get on stage and I speak for an hour in front of a bunch of people, it's very different than the relationship I have with the audience if I perform for an hour. You know, getting on stage at Red Rocks just this last May with a good friend of mine, Knuckle Bear, and performing for 10,000 people when the audience is actually sitting above you, you know, and getting the entire audience to sing that together. It wasn't a statistic or a fact or anything like that. It was a message and it was a feeling. And that is what I think the power of music can communicate. So finding the balance between that and also the humility of remembering that it's bigger than just you. Being an artist on a stage can really feed your ego, and it can steal your humility, and it can make you think that it's all about you. And so my whole life, I've been taught a lot about being humble, from my father to my mom to everybody that meets me there, say, boy, stay humble. And Kendrick said it too, stay humble. So there's a lot of beautiful intersectionalities in continuing to build a strong relationship between our movements, our activists, and our artists, you know. And if you look at really true activists, I think, there are also artists like Common, you know, who has not only a positive message in his songs, but he shows up to events and protests in the streets with people. Michael Franti and Knuckle Bear, these are all great examples of artists that not only sing about a message, but they also live it. They also go and resist and protect and protest. So continuing to create a strength and a bond between our music, our culture, our people, and our movements.
Well, and finally, as you embark on a tour this fall, what kind of messages will you be bringing, and what kind of tools will you be using to keep it focused on the movement and not on just you as a person, mm-hmm. which is what the dominant structure wants to make heroes and icons and things to market things. They're not really interested in a movement, but we're interested in movement. So what tools will you carry with you to help you stay on that focus?
I think the greatest tool that I have, one of the greatest tools, is authenticity and being really real. There have been a lot of different times where people have wanted to paint me as a hero, as a climate hero. And even if it's for a good cause, it's like, that's not the kind of person that I want to be, because first of all, that removes me from my entire generation. That makes me no longer relatable, makes me another celebrity or another star. And yeah, people can look up to that, but people can't feel like they can relate to that. And for me, when I step in front of a stage, and if I'm talking to 500 high school students, I want them to feel like I'm one of them. And if I want to be seen as an equal to other people out there, because I want them to feel like they can do and accomplish and create the change that I have in my lifetime, because they can, because you really can. I have dedicated a lot of my time and energy and effort, and have had a lot of really great support from my community and family that has made it easy. Not necessarily easy, but that has made it more possible for me than maybe other young people that don't have those kind of resources. But a message that I definitely want to carry with me for the rest of my life is that I'm just like other 17-year-olds out there. And more than that, anybody can put the time and the energy into creating what I've been able to and being a part of what I've been able to, because more than anything that I've created, I've been a part of a lot of beautiful things and I've been a part of a lot of beautiful movements. And one of the biggest things that I want to do is inspire other young leaders to rise up with me to carry the weight of the world, because it's really heavy for one person to carry on their own, you know. And even though it's about more than me, like when I'm working at home alone, even if it's on a greater movement, it can feel like a lot of the weight's on my shoulders. So when I work with the team, when I work with the movement, when I work with like 20 other young people, like that's super, super powerful. So a lot of the messages that I'm going to be carrying, first of all, is looking at how do we create strength within our movements by building diversity and intersectionality. Secondly, how do we reframe the way in which we are looking at the planet today to use climate change as a really important lens to see if all the important issues that are affecting the world? Third of all, I really want to see how do we move climate change away from being a bipartisan issue, being just an environmental issue, being an activist issue or a politician's issue. How can we change that conversation? And I think a really important way of doing that is talking about our economy and really looking at what does the economics of climate change look like? How many, there are so many crazy statistics that show all kinds of different things, but I think the point of it is that if you care about job creation, or you care about a strong economy, or you care about healthy international relations, or you care about the refugee crisis in Syria, like we have to look at how climate change plays a role in all of those, and how the future of our nation isn't going to be creating a strong economy if we're trying to revive coal jobs. That's a dead industry, you know. And we're going to continue to see the same thing. Fracking is a process to extract the last reserves of fossil fuels that we have, because we have exploited and used all of the shallow oil and gas in this nation. So we're having to go to new depths, and instead of that, we got to look up. We got to look to the solutions, and we got to look to the future of our country, not just for the planet, not just for the environment, but for our economies, for our people, for our jobs, for our communities, to build the future together. It's not about not using electricity and going and live in the bushes and like being one with nature. Yeah, we got to find that oneness and connect to the earth, but also how can we continue to build our economies and our societies and our and grow our cities in a sustainable way? So really looking at the future, sustainability, how to change the conversation around climate change, how to view all the issues that we care about through a lens of climate change, and how do we diversify and create intersectionality in order to create strength within our movements.
And that's Shirteska Martinez, the author, with some help from others, of We Rise, the Earth Guardian's Guide to Building a Movement that Restores the Planet, available this fall from Rodale Press. Klasa Kumati, thank you.
Thank you so much.